darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
And Urban Family Talk.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media.
And the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors. Even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening. No need to adjust your radio dials. The man with the squeaky plan is back. You're listening to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. I'm your host, Abraham Hamilton III, here with the full complement of the J-Squared contingent. Mr. Tross on my right, Mr. Reed on my left, Anna. I'm thinking about my daughter, Hannah, in the screening room, and we are excited to bring today's program to you. Most of you are on your way from your part-time jobs to your full-time jobs, where you are going away from what you may do outside of your home to generate an income. Not everybody does it that way, but the majority of us, the American people, we do it that way. You're making your way from the place where you generate your income to the place where you really make your living. And I want to make sure that is fully understand, because the truth is we are who we are. And the first and foremost ministry that each and every follower of the Lord Jesus Christ is called to is to the ministry of the home. We may work outside of our home on a part-time basis, meaning that's what we do with some of our day, but we are full-time fathers and mothers and brothers and sisters and sons and daughters. That is who we are on a full-time basis. And I'd just like to remind you that the call to be witnesses is not an invitation to a particularized action. It's a call to a state of being. As a result of being witnesses, we do evangelize from time to time, but we are witnesses 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, when you're on a cruise, when you're off the cruise, when you're in the sun, on the beach, whether you are, you know, raking leaves, pulling up weeds, you're witnesses on a full-time basis. So I would encourage you to approach your witnessing in that fashion. Evangelism is a feature of witnessing, but it is not the sum total of witnessing. Evangelism requires the verbal proclamation of the gospel, but being a witness happens when you're speaking and when you're not. Because even though you may not be speaking, you still are communicating. All right, let me get on with the get on here. We're going to start today's program in 1 Kings chapter 19, verses 9 through 18. There's so much here. I'm going to try my best to not detour into the wonderful nooks and crannies of this particular portion of scripture, but to focus on the main thrust of what I want to convey, because the timing in this segment doesn't allow me to do a full-throated exposition of this text. But I will do my best to stay focused and to stay diligent in this focus. This particular account is where the prophet Elijah had just confronted and defeated the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel, which is an interesting side note. I mentioned this before. What happened to the prophets of Ashtoreth? That's a wonderful biblical investigatory invitation I'll make. You need to check that out in your own time, because we know what happened to the prophets of Baal, but it also talked about there being prophets of Ashtoreth who ate at Jezebel's table. That's a whole other conversation for another time. But after that encounter is where we're going to pick up this particular portion of scripture today. After Elijah had confronted, overcome the prophets of Baal, Ahab went back to Jezreel, and Elijah also outran Ahab to Jezreel. And it is in Jezreel that Ahab reported to Jezebel what had transpired on Mount Carmel. And if you're familiar with this particular chapter in 1 Kings 19, you know that the Bible tells you that Elijah was afraid. So afraid where he ran from Jezebel. First to Beersheba. And then we're going to read that he leaves Beersheba and goes even further south to Mount Sinai or Mount Horeb, or also known as the Mountain of God. And I'm going to dig into that for a little bit in this particular portion. So let me read it, then we'll make some comments. Here we go. Verse 9. 1 Kings chapter 19, verse 9. There he, meaning Elijah, came to a cave and lodged in it. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him. And he said to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" Elijah said, "I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, For the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left. And they seek my life to take it away. And he said, go out. This is the angel of the Lord speaking to Elijah. Go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And behold, there came a voice to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? He said, I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away. And the Lord said to him, go return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. And when you arrive, you shall anoint Hazael to be king over Syria, and Jehu, the son of Nimshi, you shall anoint to be king over Israel, and Elisha, the son of Shaphat, of Abel-Meholah, you shall anoint to be prophet in your place. And the one who escapes from the sword of Hazael shall Jehu put to death, and the one who escapes from the sword of Jehu shall Elisha put to death. Yet I have kept 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal, and in every mouth that has not kissed him. Now, let's dig into this a little bit. So we know the earlier portions, for example, chapter 18, verse 46, which is the last verse of chapter 18, tells us that Elijah outran Ahab to Jezreel after he had confronted and defeated the prophets of Baal. Then we see chapter 19, verse 3, because he's afraid of Jezebel, he flees from Jezreel all the way down to Beersheba. And now I'm pointing this out. This is another one of those instances where there are no superfluous details in Scripture. The Lord is telling us, giving us a physical indication of exactly how afraid of Jezebel Elijah was. This is the same Elijah who had just called down fire from heaven, and in an about face, he's now running with tail tucked from Jezebel as a result of her threats. From Jezreel to Beersheba, that is about a 120-mile journey. Elijah is running from the northern part of Israel down to from the northern part of Jezreel down to Beersheba. He is literally trying to get as far away from Jezebel as possible. Think about that for a moment. After having demonstrated and been a vessel for God's divine power flowing and demonstrated on Mount Carmel, he turns and is running as far as humanly possible to get away from Jezebel. Then we see we have the clear indication. Elijah previously was a man who had been led by God's spirit. The speaking of the Lord was driving his conversation from the beginning of chapter 19. We see nothing about the word of the Lord coming to Elijah, which is clearly telling us that his flight from Jezebel is not a product of him seeking the Lord. He's running because he's scared. Then we see he goes further from Beersheba, where he goes even further in verse 8. I didn't read this, but I'm just setting this all up. Verse 8, it says, and he arose, ate and drank, and went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights. So that's 40 days and 40 nights more beyond Beersheba to go where? To Horeb, the mountain of God. From Beersheba to Mount Horeb is another 250 miles. This guy is on the run because he's really afraid. So when the Lord finally does speak to him in verse 9, he doesn't begin this encounter with a declarative or an affirmative statement. He begins with a question. I'll say this now, and I say it all the time. When God asks a question, it is not because he is ignorant to the answer to the question. God is omniscient. When he is asking a question, it is because he's probing for something deeper in the one to whom the question is posed. God's question to Elijah in verse 9 of chapter 19, what are you doing here, Elijah? Is very similar to God's question to Adam in Genesis 2 and Genesis 3, I should say. Adam, where are you? It's not because God didn't know where Adam was in the garden. It's not because God didn't know why Elijah was where he was. It's because he's trying to get Elijah to come to terms with his flight. And Elijah begins with laying out his resume. I've been zealous for you. I've done all of this for you. I've done all of these things for the Lord, but none of that is sufficient to protect my own skin and my own blood from being shed. Even though I've been zealous for you, I am more afraid of Jezebel than I am concerned with your auspices. The Lord doesn't respond to him. He invites him to an additional conversation to where he picks up again at the end of verse 13, where the Lord doesn't start a new conversation. He asks the exact same question. What are you doing here, Elijah? Elijah responds with the exact same resume spouting. I've done this. I've done that. I've done all of these things. And now in my zeal and my piety and my perception of myself as being the sole and lone remaining prophet, I want you to kill me because I don't want to be subject to Jezebel's wrath. You know what's amazing in this entire exchange? The Lord never once responds to Elijah's statement. He immediately responds by giving Elijah his last assignments and instructing Elijah to select and anoint his replacement. Which should be a very, very harrowing thought for those of us who allow ourselves to allow the temptation for fear or the temptation of rebellion to grow beyond a passing, fleeting thought to become the place where you live. Because I like to remind everybody, including myself, serving God is a privilege. It's not because he needs us. The Lord doesn't need me at all. The Lord doesn't need me. It is an honor and a privilege to serve him. And there's so much more I can say, but this is where I want to spend the bulk of this time, the remainder of the time in this particular segment. Verse 18 concludes with, yet I have kept for myself 7,000. Here Elijah, the thrust of his complaint before God and his proclamation of his own righteousness before the Lord is that he's the only man of God left. And the Lord is saying, mm-mm. How dare you be so proud, so arrogant to assume that you're alone? I have 7,000 in Israel who have not bowed. My timing is not your timing, but how dare you presume upon me to think that the entire weight and scope of the ministry that I desire to happen is resting on you? Now, why do I say that? I say that because when I was away the last couple of days, I was out west in the west part of our country, and I was a part of a program where Alliance Defending Freedom is involved in this program to where they are training young people, arming them with the tools for biblical worldview, and preparing them, as it was said, not to be dismissed from this training conference, but to be deployed. And I have to tell you, I had the privilege of spending time with a pretty significant group. In terms of time, it may have been 100 or so people. I don't remember how many they were. But all young people who are absolutely on fire for the Lord. It's very easy when we see, the fire challenge and, snorting things in their noses and pulling out of their mouths challenges to think that, all these young people, they're just rebelling against God and en masse and don't want anything to do with God. And folks, I'm here to tell you, just like the Lord told Elijah, that's not true. It's not everybody. It's not everybody. That there are some young people in our country who God has put his hand on, who God has marked out, who God has revealed himself to, where they have submitted themselves to his call. And I just want to tell you from firsthand encounter with these people, listening to them, hearing the depth that they have in the Lord, hearing the quality that they have in terms of their commitment to him and their dedication of their professional pursuits to the Lord God. I'm here to tell you, don't allow the popular perception of the so-called millennial group to discourage you. Because just as the Lord told Elijah, there were 7,000 in Israel who had not bowed the knee to Baal. And it's not everybody who is young and just young and dumb and flittering around. There's some young people who are sold out for the Lord, and I just want to encourage you to look for them. And when you find them, pour into them and to encourage them, because we don't want to be found on the side, kind of like Elijah at the end of his ministry, where we're complaining and saying, Lord, they don't have any young people who are willing to serve you. That's not true.
Teachers force radical ideology on students. I am Matt Staver with Freedom's Call. The National Council of Teachers of English promotes a radical agenda of transgenderism, feminism, political activism, and homosexuality under the guise of classroom English assignments. The National Teachers Conference pushed workshops titled Queering English Studies, using LGBTQ text in the middle school, and Trans Fiction for Youth. Teachers are trained how to use school assignments to spark political activism. This political agenda is a direct violation of educator trust and parental rights. Liberty Counsel is representing parents in Georgia after a teacher required her students to create a propaganda meme about the Syrian crisis and war. She forced students to create public dossiers with fingerprints, handwriting samples, and hair samples and photographs without parents' permission. Our children are precious. Stand with us at lc.org.
Please call your senators today. It's time to put an end to the Liberals' filibuster. Tell your senators to switch to a majority vote and defund Planned Parenthood now. Call the Capitol Switchboard at 202-224-3121 or go to afaaction.net. Again, call 202-224-3121 and tell your senators to switch to a majority vote and defund Planned Parenthood. Your call will make a difference.
Abraham Hamilton III.
God put us in this world at this time to be salt and light. We don't fold because of the darkness that we're facing. This is not the first time in the world's history that it's gotten dark. God has called you and I to be his ambassadors, even in this dark moment.
Tune in to the Hamilton Quarter, weekdays at 5 p.m. Central on Urban Family Talk.
Ryan Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Some ill-informed Americans believe the Second Amendment exists only to protect the right of colonial militias to be armed. But here's the actual wording. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It's not the right of the militias to keep and bear arms, but the right of the people. Who are the people? Well, that's you and me. Ordinary Americans who are looking to protect ourselves and our families. Founding era Supreme Court Justice Joseph Story, in his commentaries on the Constitution, put it this way: the right of the citizens to keep and bear arms has justly been considered as the palladium of the liberties of a republic. I don't find the right of the people hard to understand at all, do you?
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Shining light into the darkness, this is the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. And I'm sure by now many of you have heard about Omarosa Manigault Newman. Oh, my goodness. What do you want to say? Spilling the beans on the White House, or should I say trying to hawk a book? As you know, she's a former aide to the White House, and it's really still kind of, well, I won't say it's unclear. She really didn't have as important a role in the White House as a lot of people want to say, namely Omarosa would want to say. But she, since she's left the White House, she's now releasing recordings that she made while she was in the White House. And it's amazing to me that she's making all sorts of salacious claims against President Trump and against other people that apparently she never voiced prior to her termination from the White House. Most recently, and Politico is running this story as if it's some big news that Omarosa has secret recordings of Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump, which indicated in the recordings that they were unaware that President Trump was going to fire her. They didn't know she was on the chopping block. And Politico was framing it as key members of the Trump team were unaware of decisions. I'm just going to tell you, I'm not going to waste much time giving air to Omarosa's claims. It's pretty blatant and rather sad, I would say, that she is stooping to such depths to sell a book. You know, I'm like, I mean, come on, Omarosa, you've been kicking it with President Trump for over a decade. I mean, and you didn't see any of this before. You know, it would, if you're seeing revelations now that you hadn't seen before, you know, I would question, well, what were you doing for all those other years? You had no problem, you know, taking his money from The Apprentice. I'm talking about President Trump. And you certainly had no problem taking that dough, 180 grand from President Trump in the White House. It's laughable, you know, and she's released a recording where she has General John Kelly, who's the president's chief of staff, telling her basically, listen, no need to make a scene about this. Let's just have this departure to be peaceable between us. And she's insisting on John Kelly telling her whether or not President Trump knows about her termination. And John Kelly responds to her by saying, listen, the staff works for me. It doesn't matter. President, I make the staffing decisions. And so Politico and others are trying to say, see, President Trump doesn't know what's going on in his own White House. And it's just rather sad. And I think a great way to put it, and I'm going to just read this for you, is some comments from Alveda King. She is Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s niece. She works with the president on many initiatives. She's been in the White House numerous times and spent time with Omarosa. And I'm just going to read a little bit from Alveda King has said about this. She says this, quote, I and a colleague had an opportunity to sit down with Omarosa at the White House a few months ago. I also had a few moments to chat with her on the president's tour of the African American Museum and had a photo with her in the Rose Garden at the signing of the Religious Freedom Executive Order. At no time on any of these occasions did Omarosa express any of the concerns we are hearing about now. To the contrary, it's such a shame that we live in a society where someone would be comfortable writing and saying things like she is doing for money. It is sad and so troubling that many have shunned Omarosa for having a long-term business relationship as well as a friendship with the president, to such an extent that she is now so desperate that she is willing to tell lies for money and to seek the good graces of whoever is willing to buy into these allegations. It's so bad to see how far she's fallen that it's useless to even say anything negative against her. It is better to wish her the best and hope that as history continues to write itself, we will all learn the truth. It's undeniable that President Trump has done his best with her and other business associates, putting confidence into them to make opportunities for all to flourish, end quote. That's the best thing to say. And this would fall into the category of what the seasoned saints in the Churchwide group used to say. Oh, bless her heart. Bless her heart. Notice I'm not mentioning the name of Omarosa's book. Notice I didn't mention, which I'm about to mention now, that the book comes out tomorrow. Interesting timing, don't you think? The book comes out tomorrow. I'm not going to tell you the name of this dumb book. Nobody's going to read this dumb book. I mean, it's just sad. Like, you know, she got fired, and so now she's trying to make a quick come up on some cash as a result of her termination. So I'm just going to leave it right there. I'm not going to say much else about that right now. But it's sad. I think Alveda King's verbiage tackles it well, and that's just a long way of saying, oh, bless her heart. No need to say anything negative about her. After Tuesday's book release, nobody's going to read it, nobody's going to buy it, and Omarosa will fall back into, anonymity, so to speak. Now, moving on, I have some news. I like it. Hey, ho-ho, I can't tell y'all what I'm shouting about, but I may tell you later. All right, this happened last week, but I didn't get a chance to talk about this yet, so I'm going to do it now. And this happens to involve my beloved New Orleans Saints. You know, if you know I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana, that I am a New Orleans Saints fan. It turns out that the NFL has not had enough of damaging its own brand, but they want to go a little bit further with two teams, not one, two. Now, I knew about the first team, and I decided at that time to ignore it because that happened way earlier in the summer. But the Los Angeles Rams and now the New Orleans Saints have decided that they will add male dancers to their cheerleading squads.
Yeah, yeah, you got it right. So
let me go through it first. So two men, Quentin Perron and Napoleon Jennings, both made the Rams dance team in March. In March. And they've been practicing with the team ever since. Well, that inspired a guy by the name of Jesse Hernandez to try out for the New Orleans Saints dance team. And guess what? They've now made the teams. Now, some people may be saying, well, what's the big deal? I mean, we have male cheerleaders all the time. College football has male cheerleaders. High schools have male cheerleaders, some of them. I went to all-boys school, but we didn't have any male cheerleaders. Our cheerleaders came from girls' school. But this, let me just say it this way. These guys won't be doing, they won't perform the tasks, you know, like lifting cheerleaders and things that the college male cheerleaders do. No, these dudes are going to be twisting and shouting. These guys are going to be doing the huckabuck and the get up. You know what I'm talking about? And this is the NFL's latest hat tip and genuflection to the politically correct narrative concerning human sexuality and identity. Now, why they would do this, I don't know. But they're doing it. I just thought you'd like to know in the latest example of the redefinition of masculinity. You know, because Jeff shared something with me a while ago after I had the show when I was talking about skinny pants at length, where there's this new, they say they're a male company, company for men, but they want to provide a new definition of masculinity, a new expansive definition. I mean, one guy even said, you asked me what it means to be a man. It's kind of, well, you're asking me, what does it mean to be human? No, sir. Men are a subset of humans. When someone asks you what it means to be a man, that is a very specific question about what it means to be a man. It's crazy. If somebody asks you what does it mean to be a young person in today's school climate, they're not asking a generalized question. Oh, well, what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be a toddler? Yes, human, but a subset of human beings. Come on. I just, we're at a place, can I just pause for a moment? I had no intention of doing this. We're at a place where we're getting dumber by the second in our country and in our world. We're just losing our marbles by the second. We no longer can distinguish men from women. Like, that is an offensive comment. To say that men and women are different is in and of itself an offensive comment. We don't know what it means now, what marriage means. We don't know what that means anymore. I mean, it's insane. It's very much insane. I mean, the Bible says it's best. Professing to be wise, we have become foolish. Foolish. So now you have these guys who are going to be twisting and shouting along the sidelines, and many will celebrate this as the latest indication of human progress, which is why I say, no, this is not progress. This is regression. This is regression. And to be candid, I have no problem. If you have some guys that want to be cheerleaders, I can tell you some of the college cheerleaders are some of the strongest dudes you might meet. But the male cheerleaders had roles even distinguished and distinct from female cheerleaders, like in college and things of that sense. But what you have is a further blending to communicate the overall communication is that there is nothing unique nor distinct between men and women. That is the ultimate communication. That is the ultimate communication. And that is just a biological fallacy. It is a psychological fallacy. There are studies after studies after studies that show. And I mean, really, to say we have to study this is kind of dumb. We all have to study it. You can look. You know, I'll just say this one thing. I'm working out a bit more and more. I like to work out. Men doing pull-ups and women doing pull-ups is a different thing. Men doing push-ups and women doing push-ups is a different thing. All right. Good gracious. Moving right along. I have so much. I don't know if you heard this. You know, I don't want to overblow this or undersell it, but I do think this is some powerful commentary because I think in our culture where we have this thing where we are addicted to celebrity, that opinions don't become valid until a celebrity spouts them off for some reason, which I think is pretty sad in and of itself because most celebrities that are actors and actresses, they get paid for pretending to be somebody else. To say it more simply, they get paid for make-believe.
yet our society fawns over them as if they are the Maharishis of wisdom in various contexts. I think that could be a problem as well. I mean, celebrate people's talents, but just because a person may be talented in one particular area doesn't necessarily mean that they're a meritorious human being across the board. You know, just because somebody may get an Oscar for a particular movie probably doesn't mean that you should go to them for political advice. I'm just saying. Moving along, most of you are aware of Kanye West's comments concerning his support for President Trump and the backlash he's faced as a result. Well, he was on Jimmy Kimmel's show, and he had some interesting words to share that I think are important, not because of his celebrity, but because of the content of what he's saying. If you will, Jeff, please play clip number one.
Everyone around me tried to pick my candidate for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then told me every time I said I like Trump that I couldn't say it out loud or my career would be over. I'd get kicked out the black community because blacks are, we're supposed to have a monolithic thought. We can only like, we can only be Democrats and all. So I didn't have the confidence to take on the world and the possible backlash. And it took me a year and a half to have the confidence to stand up and put on the hat, no matter what the consequences were. And what it represented to me is not about policies, and because I'm not a politician like that, but it represented overcoming fear and doing what you felt, no matter what anyone said, and saying, you can't bully me. Liberals can't bully me. News can't bully me. The hip-hop community, they can't bully me. Because at that point, if I'm afraid to be me, I'm no longer yay. That's what makes yay.
Now, I felt like those comments were important for several reasons. One, you have him talking about his loss of personal confidence and that contributing to his silence on this issue. But in addition to that, his comments about being impervious to bullying from liberals and from the hip-hop community and from these various groups, and it kind of makes you wonder, because we're living in a time where moral relativism is the order of the day, where people are popularly saying this completely idiotic statement that is my truth. No, you have an opinion, but you don't have your own truth. Truth is truth. It is objective. Your opinion about something is merely your opinion. But at a time where moral relativism is so widely celebrated, so widely spread, to where everybody's encouraged to, you know, come out, be free, be yourself, to where you have a person who most would not expect to take a certain political stance, when he reveals that, he is castigated by and large. I've told you guys this story many, many times. People assume that I have a certain political leaning because of my skin color. It happens all the time. It happened just when I was traveling. I'm in the airport, and a person started talking to me in the airport, talking about how much I miss President Obama. And he had quite the rude awakening when I said, well, sir, I don't miss him at all. Not at all. I felt like President Obama, who I did not support ever, because I did my research on him after I started doing my research after I saw him in the 2004 Democrat National Convention. When I saw him, no, sir, he can give a good speech, but a good speech making does not a good president make. And it's just the type of thing where, if we really want people to be free and liberated in their thinking, how can we then at the very same time where we're expressing that sentiment, many who are influencers of the cultural levers who would say Kanye West is a sellout. How, who is he, what is he selling out? If this is his truth, who is he selling out? Stop the presses. The reality is, and I've said this before, the main advocates of tolerance are really advocates of tolerance being a one-way street. And the thing really, do we really want to just have a society that's tolerant? Stacey Washington does a great job of describing this. When you go to the doctor, they ask you what's your pain tolerance. They're asking you how much of this can you take before you break. We don't want a society where we tolerate one another. If we're going to be a community together, we need to be together, regardless of our opinion.
You know, people often ask me, Tim, what's your favorite part of the Holy Land Tour? I've been leading Holy Land Tours for many years now. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, I learned how to lead these Israel tours from my dad, who started doing them in the 60s. And then he taught me in the 80s and 90s. And now my wife Allison and I lead these tours annually to Israel. And we love going because we love seeing people's eyes when they see things such as the Sea of Galilee and the Jordan River and the Garden Tomb and the Wailing Wall. See all these things for the first time and maybe the last time in many folks' lives, because this is a bucket list trip. We're going to be going in March. If you want a brochure sent to your mailbox, give us a call at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and we'll send you a brochure. If you want to go to the website, everything's there, twholyland.com, twholyland.com.
What if I told you that you could clean your family's laundry and help reach the next generation at the same time? That opportunity is here through a company called Redeem Clean. Every time you use Redeem Clean products, you help support the ministry of the American Family Association. In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean laundry detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. Redeem Clean products work as well as or better than other products on the market. They're environmentally safe, biodegradable, and they're made in the USA. And they were developed exclusively for the support of the American Family Association. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and order Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next. A popular Tex-Mex restaurant in Houston's come under attack by protesters driven muy loco by Trump derangement syndrome. The owner of El Tiempo Cantina had the pleasure of feeding Attorney General Jeff Sessions the other day, posted a picture online. Took no time at all for an angry mob of trolls to descend on the restaurant, demanding apologies, calling for a boycott. The hate and vitriol became so severe, the restaurant owners shut down their social media pages. They even received death threats. Death threats, America! Roland Lorenzo says they were not making a political statement by feeding the attorney general. They were just interested in serving great food and giving great customer service. I know this may be a bit of a stretch, but is it possible for Maxine Waters and her minions to muster a measure of decency and leave us alone? Conservatives deserve to eat their chili con queso in peace. I'm Todd Stearns.
The Hamilton Quarter podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net and UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Back to the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. We will open the phone lines this segment, so if you want to be a part of the program, anything we've discussed so far is fair game. The number to call, and I see people calling already, if you want to join the show, it's 888-589-8840. The number to call again is 888-589-8840. You are welcome to call. Anything we've discussed so far is fair game for conversation. Let me just say this, and I'm going to use this to tie into something else that I've already referred to, but I've mentioned it before. I want to let you know it is happening at the end of this week. The end of this week, the Urban Family Communications Marriage, Family, and Life Conference will take place in Tupelo, Mississippi, August 17th and 18th. That's a Friday and a Saturday, and people are still registering. There's still time for you to do so. I will be one of the speakers. Stacey Washington will be there. Ryan Bomberger from the Radiance Foundation, a phenomenal brother and a veteran pro-life warrior, will be there. Dr. Clarence Schuler, who is a marriage counselor, will be there. And a host of other folks will be there. You don't want to miss this. I know that there are untold numbers of attacks taking place right now against the family with this, with the confusion concerning human sexuality and identity. The goal really is to stamp out marriage. The Bible tells us that marriage is a living and breathing illustration between God's relationship and the church. No wonder there's so much warfare, really, surrounding the issue of marriage. People are facing untold circumstances. I know some folks are at the brink. You know, they don't know what to do. They're at wit's end. Listen, I want to encourage you, come to this conference. Listen, some people think, well, you know, it's one of those conferences where everybody could have everything together. Listen, there are times when we need help. The Bible says brothers are born for adversity. So if you're at the place where you don't know what to do, come to this conference. It's going to be a phenomenal, phenomenal time. Phenomenal time. If you want more information, go to urbanfamilytalk.com. The website, again, is urbanfamilytalk.com, where the Marriage, Family, and Life Conference is happening this week in Tupelo, Mississippi, August 17th and 18th. And I want to let you know as well that the conference is going to begin Friday morning. Most conferences begin Friday evening. It's going to be all day Friday, and it's going to be, again, on Saturday. Please, 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 if you're considering it, make your decision. Make your decision to come to the conference. Now, there were some people asking questions about cheerleaders. And again, I want to emphasize this clearly. I don't really have a problem with guys who want to cheer. Most of us are familiar with male college cheerleaders. That's been happening for years, and I don't think anybody has ever objected to that, as far as I'm aware. Well, I won't say ever, because, of course, there may be somebody somewhere. But I've never expressed any objection to that. But in this particular phenomenon, these guys are not cheerleading the way that male college cheerleaders cheer. They are going to be dancing in a very feminine style. They are going to be acting, moving, just like the women on the dance team. So I'm just telling you, it is another indication of the furthering of the blurring of the lines and the distinction between males and females. I'll just tell you, the objective, in my opinion, in the clothing really is giving you an indication where they're feminizing men's clothing and masculinizing women's clothing. The objective is not to necessarily expand one's concept of humanity. The goal really is androgyny, to where you have this non-distinct, nondescript amalgamation of humanity, where it's not distinctly male, not distinctly female. It's just human. That's where the line is going. And even the line from the commercial you sent to me, Jeff, where it says, well, you asked me what it means to be a man. Well, it's a question more of what it means to be human. Well, no, it's a question. If I'm asking you, what does it mean to be a man? Then that is the question that I'm asking, you know. So anyway, to the phone lines we go. And I have more stories and things, but to the phone lines we go. We'll start in Louisiana. We'll go first to Louisiana, where David is on the line in Louisiana. David, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Hey, yes, thank you so much, Brother Abe. Yeah, this New Orleans having a male cheerleader blows my mind. Mm-hmm. But the reason I'm calling is touch base, and I know you didn't want to speak much of it, was Amorosa.
Yeah.
She supposedly has Trump saying the N-word, which I totally agree with. It should not be used, you know, because it's such a derogatory term.
Yeah.
But if you listen to the radio, you listen to music, you listen to everyday conversations from blacks, we throw this word out every 3-4 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no issue. You know, and to me, I remember years ago when President Bush, they did a mock burial of the N-word to try to avoid people from using it and saying, look, people, we need to just put this puppy to rest. Let's bury it. Let's stop using it.
Yeah.
Obama comes around and says, well, this is part of our culture. You know, using this word, it has a totally different meaning. Mm-hmm. It's maddening.
Yeah. David, thank you for your call and your comments. It really is maddening. And it is especially maddening for people who want to advance. And I did a long discussion last week with the cultural attempts to redefine racism and to define it in such a way to communicate as if people who have darker skin and higher melanin content, they are incapable of being racist. And that is just foolish. That is absolutely foolish. And not foolish just because I'm saying so, but it shows the danger of avoiding biblical names for things. Every person who breathes in oxygen, who lives, has the capacity of being racist. The textbook definition is skin color based prejudices. But there are those who want to say that prejudice is a lower grade of discriminatory intent than racism. It requires institutional power or control. And I offered, just as a rebuttal, these are some of the same people who would recoil and be reluctant to say things that are happening in South Africa are racist. You know, I played the clip from Simone Sanders, where she wouldn't even call Sarah Jeong a bigot for her tweets that were hostile to people with less melanin content. So it's just, it is a feature, and I don't think everybody who is engaged in this understands the details, but it is a feature of cultural Marxism to where we continuously segment society into those who have been sainted as the oppressed that are inherently virtuous because of their group status, not because of any individual merit or individual qualitative position. And those who have been demonized categorically as the oppressors, they are inherently evil, inherently morally inferior, inherently so. And it allows for the continued dividing of people groups and for the dissemination and redistribution of wealth that continues to degrade the society as a whole. I agree with you. I think the word needs to be put in the trash can, burned, never to be used again. And we all know its history and its usage. And I find no comfort or solace in cultural attempts to redefine it. Back to the phone lines. We'll go next to Canada, to our neighbors to the north, where Johan is on the line. Johan, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Yo, what's going on, Mississippi? Yo, we're here. I'm here listening with my mom to the show, actually. But I'll just touch quickly on the first thing that you were talking about. You know, yeah. Elijah, mm-hmm. You said he traveled about, 120 miles and then, another 200 miles?
Yeah.
Bro, yes. That shows me that initially, like you said, there's no superfluous details. That's the word, right? Superfluous?
Yes.
I feel like I learn a new word every time I listen to this program. You know how it is. But the fact that it was that long of a journey, right? That shows me that it wasn't just an initial oh my gosh, I got to get out of here. People have that reaction, that fear. This was a borderline becoming a lifestyle of running.
Yes.
It was such a long period of time for it to be that long of a journey.
Yes.
And that just shows me you're talking about the cheerleaders and stuff like that. Bro, in Toronto, we played the Golden State Warriors last season. And all of a sudden, I'm looking at all these red rainbows on the bottom of the screen and stuff. It was actually Trans Day, where they had a whole cheerleader squad, the first time in history, as monumental as it is, where the whole squad was, LGBTQ plus exclamation mark.
Wow.
People in that thing. Now, all this to say, Elijah saw fire fall down from heaven, bro. You can literally see fire fall down from heaven, and you can still, just not know who this God is. You can still not have an understanding and revelation and operate out of fear. So with all this stuff, we know the science, and we know that if you're a man, you're a man. If you're a woman, you're a woman. But as much as the science says, the creation scientist says, you can look at the evidence, but come up to a completely different conclusion because of your worldview. They can literally see fire fall down from heaven and still have their opinion.
That is very profound, Johan. And I'll say this, you're absolutely right. Scholars, much smarter than I am, would talk about the initial flight from Jezreel to Beersheba would take well over a week. And then the flight from Beersheba to Mount Horeb was another 200 plus miles. Now, the Bible even tells you that it took him at a minimum 40 days traveling that remainder of distance. So it's just as you said, that this was no fleeting, emotional, or should I say exclusively emotional moment. And it's also an indication that we should not rest the breadth and heft of our faith in God on the so-called highlights. That the highlights can lead to a low light if we have not found our rest in the person and work of who Jesus Christ is. There's more I could say about that, but y'all know I'm running out of time. Back to the phone lines. We go next to Ohio, where Mark is on the line. Mark, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Mr. Hamilton. I want to thank you for glorifying God first and foremost in all the things that you do. Love your professionalism, your clarity, your intelligence, the connection of Scripture to current issues. It is refreshing. I work in a police academy, and I have for years, and we have defined standards, physical standards, between males and females, no surprise. Set-ups, push-ups, and a mile-and-a-half run, irrefutable based upon biology. Mm-hmm. My question is to you, your opinion, how long is this going to go before it trickles into governmental standards such as these for men and women? And what do you think is going to happen when they clash with the current culture? Thank you so much. God bless you.
That's a great question, Mark. I'll tell you this much. I don't have any crystal ball to predict or anything like that. I hope I didn't trick anybody by saying a crystal ball. But I tell you this much is happening. It's happening sooner than it was yesterday, if that makes any sense. That there is a rush to create this blurring of the lines where it is it's sad, quite frankly, and it has implications for people to think that these things don't have implications. They do. I shared the story last week about the guy who in Canada again who wanted to buy a car, but he realized he can get a discount on his car insurance if he just officially changed his sex on his driver's license to a woman. And he did it. You know, and there were many among the transgender community and others who were offended, thinking they were making a mockery out of it. I'm saying, listen, guys, these things have downline implications. And if we are not wise enough to recognize this, and if we allow these things, I should have said this initially. Thank you for what you do in training police officers, Mark, but if we allow these things to continue, they will have an impact on our law enforcement communities, on our military communities, on our societies, and our ability to defend our neighborhoods and our nation if we don't wise up. I mean, the reality is that you can experiment all you want, but there comes a day when lecture must meet lab, you know? And again, that philosopher, Mike Tyson, everybody has a plan until you get hit in the mouth. And then what are we going to do at that point? So thank you for your question. There's more I can say about it, but I want to try to squeeze a couple more callers in. We go next to Mississippi, where Karen is on the line. Karen, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Thanks. And I ditto what the guy said about your show and your character. Really do appreciate it. I listened to you on the way home. My comment is about the book. Marissa's book will sell because people are salacious and love to hear bad things, especially about President Trump.
Yeah.
And they're going to buy it just to see what they can pick out of it, especially the Democrats, I believe. They're going to read it and say, because they love the lies. They love to read the lies. They want to believe them. I mean, they speak lies most of the time, you know, from Pelosi and Waters and all of them. It's ridiculous, but they'll buy her book.
Karen, you may be right. I don't think you are on that. I don't, because this is why I'll tell you. I think the people that will be interested in this book are going to be media people. I don't think, you know, your regular folks are going to be very interested in Omarosa's book, primarily because it's just so blatantly obvious that this is not a substantive exchange. This is an effort to sell books. I mean, if she had these recordings for all of this time, if she was interested in aiding the American people with things that were merit-worthy, don't you think she would have released it before now? She just so happens to release it a couple days before her book comes out. You know, I think media types will be interested. I think you may hear, you know, the talking heads on the various television programs that are interested. But I'm talking about in terms of actual book sales, where people will spend money on it. I don't know. I mean, think about Michael Wolff's book. Michael Wolff's book. Did that book sell pretty well? Nah. Because it got blasted as the journalistic debacle that it was. I'm sorry, got callers on the phone and I couldn't get to you all. If you call back tomorrow, we'll try to squeeze you in on the program. Just let Hannah know that you tried to get in yesterday and couldn't get in. But for everybody else, thank you so much for listening to the program, and thank you for all of the kind words that were shared today. I really, really appreciate it.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.